Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, Western civilization is under attack today, probably more so than at any time, you know, in the past 200 years. Well, I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and our special guest tonight is Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. And we are going to, once again, begin going over the Bill of Rights, the importance of this document, which really protects our rights from the tyranny of government. Because, indeed, the secret of America was not that men would be, have certain rights that were granted by government. No. The secret of America was that men had inherent rights that came from God. And to protect those rights, government were instituted among men, deriving their just power from the consent of the governed. And in an effort then to ensure that the government did not infringe on our God-given rights, the Bill of Rights was added to the Constitution, limitations on the power of government, because our founding fathers recognized that it is government that oppresses people. It's not your next-door neighbor. Yes, you can have local tyranny, you can have state tyranny, but the worst tyranny at all of all is that that comes from the federal government. Men are inherently evil, and as Thomas Jefferson said so well, in matters of politics, speak not to me of confidence in men, but rather to bind them down for mischief with the chains of the Constitution. It was John Locke who said, that government governs the best, it governs the least. Well, look and see what's happening in America today. Most of what is being done in America is unconstitutional. The war on terrorism is a fraud. If there was a real threat of terrorism, we would have had more terrorist attacks. I mean, if they could get 19 people to come over here and blow themselves up on September 11, 2001, you mean to tell me they couldn't get one other fellow to come over here wearing a belt of explosives and walk into a stadium or into a large store and blow himself up? Of course they could. But the war on terrorism is as phony as a $3 bill. But we have to create the perception. If there was really a threat, they would have immediately closed our border, armed every airline pilot. There'd be marshals on every plane. We would have deflectors on every plane to protect them from surface-to-air missiles. And none of these things have happened. They don't even inspect most of the cargo that goes onto the planes that you ride on. But, boy, they're sure going to inspect little grandmother, an 85-year-old grandmother, because we couldn't do racial profiling on Islamists. That wouldn't be nice. Well, let's get to David. David Whitney, as we begin to explore our Constitution and see how it is being eroded today, how it is being used to justify or forgetting what it says to take away our freedoms one by one. David, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan, to be on your program is an honor, and to be able to talk about these issues and really help your listeners understand that our founders were very wise men. No, they weren't perfect by any means, but they understood the biblical principles of law and government based upon, as you said, a recognition that all men are sinners. Even the best of men is not to be trusted with unlimited power. Therefore, the difficulty that they faced at the Constitutional Convention is how do you enable the government to control people such that people's rights are secured, that one person's not going to violate another person's God-given rights. That's the first problem, but the bigger problem then is how do you control the government to prevent the government from being the one that's going to violate the God-given rights of the individuals? Of course, they had a very personal experience with a government that was very ready to violate their God-given rights, the government of King George III, as well as Parliament, repeatedly had violated God-given rights and demonstrated that they had no interest in ever restraining government, but rather expanding its powers and violating their rights on an increasing basis. So this led them to say that we have a God-given right in addition to our others, and that is to form a new government founded on the biblical principles of what is just and right according with God's law. And as they finished the ratification process, it was very clear that it was absolutely necessary to establish a Bill of Rights which would further, I mean, the basic principle of our Constitution is the federal government can only do that which we have given them a specific grant of power to do. Nothing more. Nonetheless, to add an additional wall around that government was what the Bill of Rights was intended to do. That it would say that not only these are the powers that government has and these are the things it can do, here were the Bill of Rights, these are the things that it cannot and must not do. And, we saw very specifically as we looked at the first several of those amendments, extremely important areas of religious freedom and the right to keep and bear arms, and right to private property and protection of your private property. And then as we begin to look at the Fourth Amendment, we see what is a necessary function of government, because biblically the function of government is to administer justice in a society and also to protect a society from outward attacks from enemies. But if the government is going to exercise a ministry of justice, which really is its God-given jurisdiction and its rightful duty, that duty itself can be abused. And so in the entire process of a criminal justice system, the people need to be protected from what could become a tyrannical governmental system exercising abusive powers against them, which is where we come to the Fourth Amendment, that the government, if it suspects that you have committed a crime, it has certain restrictions on its powers, its police powers against you, and therefore you're protected from unreasonable searches and seizures in the Fourth Amendment. And as we said, that Fourth Amendment has been gutted by the illegal, and illegal because it's unconstitutional, Patriot Act. Patriot Act 1 and then the reauthorization of it, both of them are illegal because they violate the Fourth Amendment, and the Fourth Amendment is the supreme law of the land. Any law made that violates the supreme law of the land is no law at all. The Patriot Act is illegal, and those who have taken an oath...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with David Whitney. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. Speaking, of course, of the ideas that are being put forward by the current administration, such as the Patriot Act, to protect us from those wicked terrorists you know, that are just going to come across our borders, streaming across our borders, and committing all sorts of acts of terrorism. And here we are, what, 6 years, you know, well over 5 years since the attack, 5.5 years. Not one major act of terrorism. The question, Israel, there are constant bombings there, but they can't get anybody to just take a flight over to Mexico and cross our borders or sneak in. Not one, and all the Muslims we have here in this country, and there are lots of them, millions of them, and none of them are going to strap on their explosive vests and blow anything up. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been had. They are using the Patriot Act not to fight terrorism, but to take away the freedom from the American people. And if we adhere to the Constitution, why none of this would be happening? Go ahead, David.
And just a comment on that, is kind of ironic to hear all the hue and cry recently about the FBI even violating the terms of the Patriot Act. I mean, good grief, here's a law, a lawless law, a violation of our Constitution, and the FBI can't not even stay within the bounds of this lawless rule that they've established as the Patriot Act. These people obviously are not to be trusted. They are the enemy. They are a domestic enemy of our freedom, domestic enemy of America, because America is not what the president says it is. America is our founding documents, our Declaration, our Constitution, our Bill of Rights. And so the Fourth Amendment has been egregiously violated here by the current administration, and unlawfully so. They have acted criminally in violating this law, And they have taken an oath before Almighty God to uphold this, which means on Judgment Day there's going to be literally hell to pay for all of these law breakers who've taken an oath before Almighty God and now have just abandoned obedience to that oath. This past week I was testifying at our state legislature in Annapolis and reminding the legislators there that they took a solemn oath before Almighty God to uphold the U.S. Constitution as well as the Maryland State Constitution, and that most of them have never read either of those documents. They endanger their eternal soul by swearing to uphold something they've never even read. And one of the delegates said to me, and I was trying to warn him about Judgment Day. He said, I have no concern about that. He had never read the Constitution of the State of Maryland, but he could care less about God holding him accountable to the oath that he took, endangering his immortal soul. Well, these people, there will be hell to pay, and there will be justice that comes crashing down upon them, maybe before they even expect it now. Well, anyway, the Fifth Amendment, if the government does take you to court, there's protections you have before you actually even face that court, the grand jury protecting you if you're charged with a capital or other infamous crime, to see that what the government is doing really has some basis in fact and in reality, that the grand jury does an independent investigation of those things before you are actually put on trial. Then if you are put on trial, you cannot be tried twice by the same jurisdiction for the same offense. That is, double jeopardy is prohibited by our Constitution, and no compulsory self-incrimination is allowed, because if they allowed it, it would mean government would ultimately torture people to get them to confess to whatever crime it is that government wanted them to confess to, obviously false confessions being the result. And then also the Fifth Amendment says that none of us can be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, without the justice turning as it should. As we see in our day, all three of those are flagrantly violated in our land. And finally, the Fifth Amendment protects the taking of private property. That eminent domain type of abuse is not to be tolerated. And we have the Supreme Court weighing in on the exact opposite of that, which means they also are law breakers, and the punishment for them should be impeachment for having given justification for stealing property by a government agency just because they'll get more money, more tax revenue from that property. So those are the protections you have on the beginning end of facing a criminal charge against you. The Sixth Amendment then talks about what should happen and what your rights are if you are in the process of being brought to trial, the first of which is a speedy trial. You have a right to a speedy trial. That is, the government shouldn't arrest people, put them in prison, and let them just sit there for endless days and months and so on without bringing them to trial. Every effort should be made to have a speedy trial, and those trials should be public and must be public trials, because it's very clear that if judicial system goes in private and the public is not allowed to observe and be a witness to what's taking place, gross injustices will prevail. Our founders, they knew this very near in history, English history. One of the most infamous court systems was called the Star Chamber. Star Chamber really referred to the ceiling of the room where these proceedings took place that was covered with stars, and it was notorious as terrible injustices. And because there was no public accountability for the Star Chamber, they met in private and were answerable to no one, basically, and grave injustices were done. And our founders knew this. This was a recent English history that they were well aware of. The third protection of the Sixth Amendment is that a jury trial, and the jury will be of the people of the particular state and district where you're charged with having committed a crime. And the reason this is, as English common law repeated again and again, a jury of your peers. That is, people who know the situation, the people who are familiar with the circumstances. If you bring somebody from far away, from another state, they may not be familiar with the circumstances of your particular state or situation, and they're far less likely to be just to you because they may kind of view you as a foreigner. And this is what happened with our founders and that era. King George, if he wanted to get a trial where he would be able to convict a person and throw the key away, put him in prison forever, he knew that he couldn't accomplish that with American juries. And so he would assign the trials in England. So an American would be taken on board ship, sailed across the Atlantic Ocean to stand trial before a group of people who were obviously not his peers, who had no commitment to him, no appreciation for him, viewed him as a foreigner, and rather than viewing him as a neighbor. Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, it's much easier to accomplish the obedience to that command with people that you know or people that are near you, so people in your same county or people in the same town or township, than if it's somebody from all the way across the other side of the country. And so oftentimes what you see take place, and you hear about this in the news, is that there's a trial where there's great notoriety about the events that took place, and the people have strong feelings about it. And so it said, well, you know, this person's never going to get a fair trial in their own community, so we're going to have a change of venue, and we're going to take this person to a distant area or perhaps even to a different state. All of that is a violation of this principle, that you are to have a jury of your peers, means that they are of your district. That's the third protection you have in the Sixth Amendment. The fourth is that you are to be informed of the charges against you with sufficient particularity and sufficiently in advance that you are able then to prepare a defense. Again, here was a favorite tactic of the tyrant King George III. Charge somebody, but not inform them of the charges. Keep it a secret until the trial is brought up, and you have no time, of course, to prepare a defense if you don't even know what the charges against you are. And that is completely unjust. You need to give the criminal charged an opportunity to sufficiently prepare a defense of his case, because that person is innocent until proven guilty. That is the basic assumption of our justice system, and an assumption today that's being rapidly overturned in many people's minds. It's like, hey, if you've been arrested, if you've been charged, you must be guilty. And that's what many people assume the grand jury indictment is about. Grand juries never decide a person's guilt. They just decide whether the government has sufficient evidence to proceed with a case, or they can decide, no, there isn't sufficient evidence here. The government's trumping up these charges, and there's no way this person ought to go to trial. And they don't hand down an indictment. They don't pronounce a person guilty. Oftentimes the way the media spins things today, a grand jury indictment is considered, the person's obviously guilty. If you're being brought into court, you're obviously guilty. I pray that if you ever serve on a jury, you would not hold that attitude. You would maintain this person is innocent until proven guilty. And that's what we're here in the court to determine, their guilt or their innocence. And along those same lines, then, the person, fifthly, in the Sixth Amendment, has the right, a God-given right, to confront and cross-examine their accusers. Somebody says that I claim that you stole these objects from this store at this place and this time. And you, if there is to be justice, we need to examine that witness to determine if that witness, by what means they have that information, and check it out to see if they contradict themselves. So were you at such and such a place and such and such a time, and what were you doing, and why were you there, and who, you know, that kind of cross-examination of a witness is extremely important, particularly in our day when many witnesses are snitches for the government. They're getting some benefit in order to witness against another person being brought to trial, and that is a practice, I think, that is really a violation of the intent of our protections under the Fourth and Fifth and Sixth, and as well as the Seventh Amendment.
But of course, the thing is that you never know where that person is telling the truth. If they're going to get a reduced sentence, they're going to get off scot-free when they've committed a terrible crime, would they lie? Of course they'd lie. I mean, you need an impartial witness. You do not need people who you don't know whether they're telling the truth or not. But it seems that the whole idea is to win the case, to put the person in prison, rather than to get to the truth. And unfortunately, when a nation's turned against God, you will have difficulty getting justice. Well, David, go ahead and pick up the story there.
Well, as you confront and cross-examine those accusers, of course, you need the power available to you as a...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Certainly, in a civil trial, your best protection is a jury, if the jury will do what it's supposed to. Now, the problem with juries is that many times they allow the judge to tell them exactly what to do. You have to find this person guilty. I remember talking to Sarah Bain, who is the chief in charge of the jury at the Waco trial. And she felt the wrong people were on trial. She thought the government should have been on trial. She felt those people were innocent. And the judge told them they had to come in. They had to. There was no question. They had to find them guilty of at least something, some minor infraction, And, of course, they listened to the judge, and they gave him a minor infraction. They felt that he should be out of prison immediately. And instead of that, the judge, who was working in direct under direct control of the Attorney General's office, which was trying to cover up the fact that a special forces team had been sent in to kill the women and children, and we have a video where they actually have people who talk to the members of the special forces team. The judge sent those innocent people to prison for 40 years. The jury has to be able to stand up to the judge and say, we determined what's right and wrong. Well, but you tell the rest of the story there, because I think this is such an important point, David.
It is, and you know, in our legal system, for all the way back into, you know, English common law, it is always the job of the jury to judge the law as well as the facts. That is, the jury's first task is to look at the law that this person is being charged with having violated and to determine if this law is legitimate, if it is legal, which most people say, well, what do you mean? How can you have an illegal law? Laws, whatever, you know, is spilled on a piece of paper by a legislature, and you know, if the governor or the president signs off on it and the judiciary says, oh, yeah, that's constitutional, of course it's constitutional, well, then it's law. No, it is not. We need to understand we have wicked people, tyrants in places, high places of power, and it could be that the legislature pens a piece of a law that is against the Constitution. Earlier in the program here, we were talking about an illustration of that with the Patriot Act. It is unconstitutional, which means it is unlawful. It's an illegal piece of legislation or statute, whatever you want to call it. It's not law. So if a person's charged under the Patriot Act, which was signed by President Bush, and evidently the Supreme Court hasn't seen in its wisdom to even question the Patriot Act, which is blatantly unconstitutional, so if the legislature signs off on it, the president signs off on it, the Supreme Court signs off on it, it's not law unless the jury also signs off on it. And so the jury, to be an effective juror, needs to know the U.S. Constitution. They need, if it's a state trial, they need to know their state's constitution to be able to judge the law first. And then, in turn, if they determine, yeah, okay, this law is constitutional, this law is valid, it's legal, then to judge the facts and say, okay, is this person being charged against with this crime? Do the facts bear it up that he really is guilty of having violated this crime? If a jury doesn't do that, if they don't judge the law first of all, they may charge a person with having violated a statute that itself is illegal. And so the person really not guilty of having violated the true law. Instead, they should be set free, and a jury that understands this can do exactly that. Here in Maryland, for example, in our Declaration of Rights, which is basically parallel to the U.S. Bill of Rights, Article 23 says exactly this, that the jury is to be the judges of the law and the facts. The amazing thing is, and I just read this today, in 1980, what's equivalent to the Supreme Court of Maryland, the appeals court, ruled that the jury was not to be told that they are judges of the law and the facts anymore. So up to 1980, judges typically, in their instructions to the jury, would say, you are the judges of law and facts. After 1980, because of the appeals court, which is the Supreme Court of Maryland, said, no, you can't do that. Well, wait a minute. Those judges were actually violating the specific laws of the state of Maryland, and every single one of them should have been impeached. They should have been stripped of their wicked black robes and thrown out on their ears. They were not. Instead, today, no judge in the state of Maryland will tell you what the actual law says on the books that the jury to judge the law and the facts. They've conspired together as wicked black-robed lawyers to hide the truth from the juries. We're hoping to inform hundreds of thousands of Americans about these rights that we still have under our U.S. Constitution.
And really under the laws of the state of Maryland. Unfortunately, we have judges who have a different agenda. They want things to run very smoothly. They do not want any limitation placed on the power of the judges. They certainly are not interested in justice at all. We're going to be back in just a moment or two with Pastor David Whitney here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. David, pick up the story there.
Well, so if you imagine this, and I would encourage people to think of their role as a juror. I know most people, when they receive a summons for jury duty, they just dread it. No, you should rejoice. I have the opportunity here to protect my fellow citizen, my neighbor, somebody who may live in the next town. I have the opportunity to protect them from a tyrannical government without having to go and get a weapon. This is a peaceful way to stop in its tracks a tyrannical government. One person, just one citizen. You see, it only takes one out of 12 to stop the whole thing. If 11 jurors say, this guy's guilty, he ought to be thrown in the slammer, forget it. Lock him up, throw away the key. One juror can say, no, I judge the law, and I know that the law is invalid, and therefore he's not guilty, not based on the facts, but based upon the judgment of this illegal, invalid law. So one citizen out of 12 can stop a tyrannical government in its tracks. And we've seen this happen, and we've seen the attack. In Idaho, Joyce Asher stood up in her jury deliberation, and she told them what our law in America clearly states, that the jury is the judge of the law and the facts. Of course, the judge had instructed the jury before they began deliberations that he was the judge of the law. He was to tell them the law. He gave them the instructions. They were to just judge the facts. She knew better because she was an educated juror. And ultimately, they tried to, when one of the jurors snitched that this was going on, they ultimately, after the trial was over, went after her and charged her with, I forget if it was obstruction of justice or what have you. And it was an amazing thing because I talked to some of the people out in Idaho as her day of trial was coming. And I encouraged them to gather as many people as they possibly could so that judge would know that the entire community, in fact, the entire state and people across the United States like myself, were watching his actions in court that day. And what he did, because they were charging her with following the law, that the judge or the jury is to judge the law and the facts, that she was breaking the law according to them. But they packed the courtroom, they surrounded the courthouse, they had so many people they couldn't get in, and that judge said, no, she is innocent, she has not at all violated the law, because the law says that the jury is the judge of the law as well as the facts. And so we praise God for that victory, but it did cost her $15,000 to defend herself against a tyrannical government attempting to railroad juries and ultimately
hold
what
that,
they want.
Hold that thought right there, David. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney. And before we go on, I want David to get out his address, his website, and how you can get in touch with the Institute on the Constitution, and perhaps even get one of their packets, so that you too can teach the truth about the Constitution of the United States, which is the very foundation of our freedom, that is not taught in our schools, at least not accurately, that is not taught in our churches, that is not taught in our law schools. In fact, there's very, very few members of either Congress or the state legislatures who have any idea what the U.S. Constitution says, because they've been deliberately, intentionally, and maliciously dumbed down by those people who do not believe in freedom, but believe in rule by an aristocracy of the elite. And we're moving rapidly in that direction. Go right ahead, David. Let's get your telephone number, your website.
Yes, our toll-free number to call and order a host kit. And by the way, a host kit is a turnkey way in which you, without really any advanced preparation or any advanced knowledge on your part, can communicate these truths with Dr. John Einsmo as the lecturer for 12 lectures of on the Constitution, the Declaration, the Bill of Rights. And David Barton does 2 lectures on the myth of the wall of separation between church and state. Also, what our founders taught was the only way to preserve this republic, which is to elect godly Christian men to office. All of this together in a host kit with a student manual and instructions for you as a hostess, how to put together a class and draw people together to study these materials. You can order our host kit by going to our toll-free number, which is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number, again, for Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. 1-800-730-9796. Or if you want to go to our web store online, it's iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. And there are other materials in addition to the host kit that can help educate you and prepare you to be able to teach others these valuable truths. And the encouraging thing, Dr. Stan, is 50 states across the Union now have at least one class that has been or is being conducted even at this time, as hundreds of Americans and ultimately thousands and tens of thousands of Americans are going to learn these vital truths. We can take our country back from the tyrants, from the wicked who plan the destruction of our Constitutional Republic. We can take it back from them, and it's as simple as saying, hey, I need to gather together some of my friends, or I need to go to the pastor at my church and encourage him to allow me the opportunity to host this class, maybe one of our Sunday school classes, or maybe an evening class during the week, or you know, whatever opportunity. If just the Christians in America, just those who claim to be followers of Christ, would learn what their responsibility is as a Christian citizen by understanding and knowing our founding documents, we could turn this country around. It's as simple as that. And the exciting thing, Dr. Stan, is that anybody can do this. I was talking with a fellow tonight in our class here in Maryland who is finishing up hosting a class with his church, and they'll be graduating in May. He's very excited about the group of people that he's taken what he's learned by attending our classes, and he's gone out and done it. And he said, he turned to the rest of the class and said, any one of you could do this. It's not rocket science. Any one of you could do it. It's as simple as putting a DVD in, showing the lecture, walking people through a series of questions to help them solidify what it is that we're teaching. So that's an opportunity we encourage each of your listeners to take up. We were talking earlier about the Seventh Amendment, which protects our right to a jury trial in cases involving common law or cases of more than $20, and we were talking about that precious right that if just one juror understands this, he can stand against the entire system, a president that's unconstitutional, a Congress that's unconstitutional, Supreme Court and federal courts that are unconstitutional, a judge in the courtroom who's unconstitutional, and even 11 jurors who also are unconstitutional. All it takes is one out of 12 to stand up and say, no, I will not permit my fellow citizen to be abused like this. No, I will follow Jesus' command to love my neighbor as myself. What do I want for myself? I want justice in the court of law. What do I want for my neighbor? I want justice according to the law of the land, not according to the tyrannical dictates of some judges or congressmen or president or governors. And a judge, the Seventh Amendment says this, a judge cannot substitute his opinion for that of a jury. That if a jury says this man is not guilty, a judge cannot reverse that and say, oh, well, no, the jury's obviously off their rocker, this guy is guilty. A judge cannot do that. The only thing he can determine is that the case was erroneously submitted to the jury, this case never should have been permitted to go before a jury at all, and not to submit his own opinion. But what they attempt to do to get around this is they attempt in the instruction phase of the trial, which is after all the arguments have been heard, closing arguments and all that, just before the jury goes off to the deliberation, the judge will give them a series of instructions. And he attempts, in those series of instructions, to control the jury and to really substitute his opinion for that of the jury. And this is tyranny. This is black robe tyranny, and is to be resisted by every juror. And so that's the power. If you are a juror, you have enormous power to do what is right yourself and to stop injustice from being done to your neighbor. And so we encourage anyone that has an opportunity to serve as a juror to really thank God for that honor, that privilege you have of stopping injustice and stopping wicked tyranny in our land today. Well, moving from the Seventh Amendment, the Eighth Amendment steps, okay, if you've gone to court and a trial has been held and you've been charged with these crimes and then convicted of these crimes, well, you have rights as well in the punishment phase of our judicial system. The first is that no excessive bail is permissible. Why? Well, because a defendant is presumed innocent in our system of law. Innocent until proven guilty, and therefore his right to be free, that is, his God-given right to liberty, until he's convicted, is not to be infringed. That is, unless he poses a clear danger to public safety. So here's a person who's been shooting up the town and obviously is not to be trusted in public, or that this person is likely to flee before the trial is held. So those are the two factors. Does he pose a danger to public safety? Is he likely to flee? And so the purpose of bail is to make sure that defendant doesn't flee pending a trial. Bail should therefore be no more than is necessary to ensure the defendant's appearance at the trial. And of course that amount depends on the circumstances, the nature of the offense, the defendant's record, and the defendant's ties to the community, and so on. But there's never to be excessive bail. That is, bail that is punitive just simply because you want to hurt the person. Think of a case here about 2 years ago in the city of Baltimore where an individual was loading his own shells, so he had gunpowder stored in his house, and there's some idiotic bureaucratic regulation about the amount of gunpowder or whatever, and he evidently was violating this regulation, and it's a misdemeanor. That's all it is. And some kind of raid was conducted on his house, BATF, those tyrants and jackbooted thugs. Anyway, they raided his house and claimed he had all this, you know, violations of these things, and it was a misdemeanor. And they put bail on him of $1 million. $1 million for a misdemeanor. This is ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. That's the kind of tyrannical thuggery that the Eighth Amendment is designed to prevent. No excessive bail is to be permitted. Secondly, no excessive fines are to be tolerated. And again, excessive is that which is unreasonable considering the nature of the offense the person has committed. For example, go all the way back in English history to Magna Carta, 1215 A.D., and the Magna Carta describes excessive fines as forfeitures that deprive the defendant of his ability to earn a living. In other words, any fine that ruins a person so that they can no longer make a living, it strips them of the essential assets, that is an excessive fine and is not to be tolerated. If the person has committed a crime and that crime is to be punished, how it's to be punished is to be carefully considered and not brutally applied as is often done today. And see, the problem today is so many of the bureaucratic branches of government, which really are not legitimate in many respects, are given police powers and even judicial powers. There's a tax court. You've probably heard of the IRS tax court. In the tax court, you're not innocent until proven guilty. You're guilty until proven innocent. All they got to do is throw down a charge against you, and they can garnish your wages and take your bank account, take your cars and your home. I mean, it's extremely abusive of our system of government, and the IRS should never be permitted to get away with this. They're breaking the law. They're violating the Constitution of the United States. The Fifth and the Sixth and the Seventh and the Eighth Amendment are all being violated by them on a daily basis. Well, why are they getting away with it? Because Congress, who's the one that controls the IRS, Congress refuses to follow the Constitution and refuses to force this bureaucratic arm of government to abide by the supreme law of the land. When these people in power don't abide by the supreme law of the land, they are law breakers. And they need to be brought to justice and not allowed to continue in their tyranny. Well, the third aspect of our Eighth Amendment protections is that no cruel and unusual punishments are permitted. Of course, framers were thinking of the unreasonable kind of tortures and disembowelment and mutilations that often took place in their day. One of the favored forms was drawn and quartered, and most Americans never know what in the world that is, but take a man and lay him flat on the ground, tie a rope to his arms and his legs, and then tie the other end of those four ropes to horses. And then at the same time, whip those horses in four different directions. So the person is pulled, literally pulled limb from limb. Torture. And that was a favorite of some certain kings, and they knew that that was cruel and unusual punishment. Never did the founders view the death penalty, capital punishment, as cruel and unusual punishment, nor does this aspect of the Eighth Amendment prohibit prohibits cruel and unusual punishment, but it does not prohibit capital punishment. How do we know that? Well, we look back at the Fifth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment says that no one can be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Well, that means with due process of law, you could be deprived of life, liberty, or property. Your life can be taken in a judicial act of executing you for capital crimes, such as murder. And so it was never the intention of our founders that this would have ever been interpreted as meaning that capital punishment was in the category of cruel and unusual. First of all, in their day, it certainly was never unusual. Many people were put to death. Hanging was quite common, and so on. And it certainly was not cruel in comparison with disemboweling or drawn and quartering and that sort of thing. However, in our day, 1972, in Furman v. Georgia, the Supreme Court case, Justices Brennan and Marshall argued that the Eighth Amendment must be interpreted according to, and I'm quoting their words here, according to an evolving standard of decency. That society has evolved to a point that capital punishment is considered cruel and unusual today. Now, think about those words. Evolving standard of decency. What is in one generation considered indecent may be considered decent in the next generation. Consider the terrible change that's taken place in our land concerning sexual mores. What was considered gross immorality today is trumpeted as and championed in Hollywood and movies and TV and so forth, and now legally people are declaring their right to sodomy, and that's, we're advancing and we're far ahead of it. The reverse is actually true. It's indecency, an evolving standard of indecency is what's happened here today. And so there's no guarantee in any society that it's going to be more just in the future than it was in the past. Certainly our day and our court systems certainly illustrate this. 150 years ago, in most courts of the land, you could get justice. Today, in most courts of our land, you'll never see justice. You might as well not only see that she's blind, but she's also absent from the courtroom altogether. So their hope and their confidence in an evolving standard of decency is an illusion and actually a denial of what the Bible clearly teaches, that the heart of man is desperately wicked. Who can know it? It's not evolving in the right direction. It tends to devolve. It gets worse over time, especially when God's law is rejected as it has been rejected in our day. So this evolving standard that the Justices Brennan and Marshall cited in 1972, Furman v. Georgia, is a very dangerous thing. And it disregards absolute truth because it looks like, to me, our society is going downward in its standards, not upwards, which means it could come to a day where, hey, drawing quartered, yeah, that's a good way to execute someone, or who knows what other gruesome means of torture will be permissible. We've seen a growing and very disturbing trend in the war being conducted in the Middle East and what takes place in Guantanamo Bay and so on. All these things that basically we have permission, or the president has given permission for those in his departments to give orders for torture to take place against enemies, whoever those enemies might be considered to be. And we ought to be very attentive to what took place with the Warner military reauthorization bill, because basically they've said in that they can consider anyone, any U.S. citizen, an enemy of the state, an enemy, a terrorist. And if they do, then your Fifth Amendment rights, your Sixth Amendment rights, your Seventh and Eighth Amendment rights are completely gone, and they give themselves permission to torture even United States citizens by the wicked legislative acts that they have taken. So no cruel and unusual punishment is permissible according to our Eighth Amendment. And again, this is the supreme law of the land. This is the standard by which we need to hold our elected officials accountable.
David, before we're just about out of time with this segment of the program, I do want you to get your telephone number, your website out one more time, because what you are hearing tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is so vitally important. You must understand our Constitution, and you must help us teach it. How can people get in touch with you?
They can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That toll-free number is 866-730-9796, or our website is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com.
And that's the Institute on the Constitution, iotconline.com. We're going to be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and David, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I'd like to remember what Thomas Jefferson said, "God who gave us life gave us liberty at the same time. Can the liberties of a nation be thought secure when we have removed the only firm basis, a conviction in the minds of the people that these liberties are the gift of God, that they are not to be violated but with his wrath?" Now, Jefferson, I don't believe, was ever an Orthodox Christian, but I tell you here, he understood these biblical principles of law and justice better than many Christians do in our own day. And he understood that when people violate God's law, and when people violate God-given rights to life, to liberty, to property, the government that violates that should expect the wrath of God to come pouring down upon their head. Oh, there's so many examples of the egregious violations in our day, abortion being one of the terrible ones, of 45 million innocent unborn. And the blood of those people, God's Word says, the blood of those people cries out to its Creator for justice. And obviously justice is not being served, and there's so many other examples. But what Thomas Jefferson says, we need to understand that our liberties come from God. Our God-given rights come from Him. And those liberties are to be secured by civil government. That's the only purpose of civil government, to secure those rights. And that's why we have a Constitution. That's why we have a Bill of Rights, to secure our God-given rights against not only our neighbor who may violate those rights, but especially against a government that, drunk with power, should seek to act like a tyrant and violate our God-given rights. And our Constitution and Bill of Rights, they're not a self-enforcing document. They will only be enforced by we the people, which is why we need to understand them. We need to communicate these truths to as wide a circle of people as we can in order to prevent the kind of tyranny that's taking place in our land today. And it's doable. Every single person listening to this program tonight, they could get a copy of our host kit, and they could conduct an Institute on the Constitution in their home, in their church, community center, and begin the process of taking our republic back from the tyrants who currently are in control of things.
All right. Well, our guest has been certainly David Whitney, and I hope you've enjoyed his dissertation. We'll look forward to having you with us again next month, David.
Thank you. Dr. Stan, God bless you and your work you're doing.
And thank you for all you and the crew there, the Institute of the Constitution, are doing. Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and certainly we hope many of you will heed what David has said. Now, at one point in the conversation, we were talking about, and I mentioned Waco. I mentioned the fact that there was a special forces team sent in to kill the women and children. We have a video, actually it's called A New Revelation, where actually there are two people who actually talk to the members of the special forces team, which was supposedly sent in to kill the women and the children. They were, of course, American military. It's a violation of the law to use American military against the citizens of this country, but they did it anyway. The video is available, along with a great deal of other information about Waco. We've forgotten Waco. We've forgotten those 17 little children who were blown up by explosives, along with their mothers huddled in entree protecting themselves, from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which, of course, had actually been sent to kill them, and they were there to kill them. The federal prosecutor actually handled that case, eventually got such qualms of conscience that he actually helped white people who were trying to find out what really happened get evidence, and then he himself came under prosecution, and of course they went after him. They got his law license. He was threatened with being sent to prison. Whether he ever was sent to prison, I've forgotten the details. But he was set up on phony charges. He was the federal prosecutor who got the conviction, who sent the Davidians to prison for 40 years. And he knew it was wrong. And the fact that you've never heard these two things I've told you simply reflects the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. And we have interviews with the people who, of course, have worked with that prosecutor. We have actually the video still, a new revelation. People don't want it anymore. They're not concerned about Waco. They're not concerned about what happened at Ruby Ridge. They're not concerned about what happened at the Oklahoma City bombing and the Murrah Building. In fact, they're really not even too concerned about the torture that's gone on in the Middle East against helpless women and children and against, of course, the captives there. Things are in total chaos. How could our leaders have done such a poor job in Iraq unintentionally? And I will tell you, it was not done unintentionally at all. It was done intentionally and purposely. And once our military had secured Baghdad, Paul Bremer of the Council on Foreign Relations arrives and dissolves the Iraqi army and police force and the Iraqi civil service so there'd be no services. And then he closes down all the government-run factories so people don't have jobs. And then, of course, if you read the latest article, it's in the March 5th issue of the New Yorker magazine by Seymour Hersh. He will tell you that our government is giving money to the very people who are funding the terrorists in Iraq. It doesn't make sense. Well, of course, it really does make sense if you understand that nothing happens by chance. And I think we're on the verge of a much larger war in the Middle East because there are spiritual forces which are bringing about this whole insanity. You'll certainly want to read our February newsletter, not available yet, but it will be if you want a free copy. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to know more about what really happened at Waco, what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened on 911. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll be glad to send you a copy of the catalog that we have. And, of course, my pamphlets on foreknowledge 911 are very revealing. You go to our website at RadioLiberty.com, that's RadioLiberty.com, and pull down our August, September, October, November, December of the 2006 newsletters, put them together and start reading in August and read them through to the very end and feel free to copy them and distribute them. Begin making preparation for the difficult times that lie ahead. If you're interested in getting any of our catalogs, why call Mary. On health products, on health products, or anything that you think you might need as we move from into a coming period of chaos and crisis, and then pray for America. Pray for revival because we're involved in a spiritual battle. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and if you're, of course, listening out across America. Well, we ask you to hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us a very, very special guest, one I was looking forward to, and that's Bob Chapman, who writes the International Forecaster. Now, it comes out twice a week. It's about 25, 30 pages, twice a week. And I will tell you that I always look forward to reading it, because Bob does an excellent summary of everything that's happening, not only financially, but, of course, politically. And it's certainly, from the point of view of general news sources, excellent. But even more so, I think it's vitally important that people understand what is happening financially, because we are living in a changing world. We have been living, certainly very, very well, on a fiat money system since going back to August of 1971. And we've had a few ups and downs. We did have a dropout in the stock market in 1980 and again in 1987. And then, of course, at the beginning of 2000. But things have really been pretty good. We've had tremendous prosperity, not only in the United States, but throughout the entire world. We've created literally trillions of dollars of liquidity. We've built up the finest enemy that money could buy in communist China, truly an economic miracle, all built with your money, money from American banks, Export-Import Bank, Asian Development Bank, World Monetary, International Monetary Fund, certainly Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, Chase, Manhattan Bank, Citi Corporation, both incidentally Rockefeller-controlled banks. We have actually contributed to the economic development of India. It's exciting as the world is changing, and of course the lot of many people in the lesser developed countries is improving to some degree, although still half the world lives in abject poverty with an income of less than $2 a day. But at the same time, we see the destruction of the economy of our own country. We see our jobs being sent overseas. And now, of course, we see the collapse of the housing bubble. And as it begins to deflate, even people like Jimmy Rogers have said, and Jimmy Rogers is a very well-known commodity expert and investor, he says that there's going to be serious consequences. Well, to bring us up to date with what's going on, Bob Chapman, thanks so much for being with us again.
Well, thank you. It's always very nice being on your program.
Well, tell us
what. I look forward to it.
Tell us what your take is on what's going on. And if I said something you disagree with, why, you let us know.
No, not at all. I think there's a number of things going on that the projection of what has happened in the past and plans by the Illuminists for the future. I see that today the Speaker of the House, Mrs. Pelosi, by not challenging, allowed the additional $100 billion to go through for Iraq and Afghanistan. And I noticed that nothing was said about the some 30 or 40,000 people who were being sent over to those areas to bolster or to surge, as they call it, with the number of troops. It's my opinion that...
Hold on, that's all right there, Bob. We'll be back
sure.
In just a moment with Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. Okay, Bob, go ahead and pick this up. Bob was just saying
it's my opinion that what the Illuminists are trying to do is to extricate themselves from Iraq. That's their primary concern, and stop the civil war which we created. And at the same time, make sure that the major oil companies in the United States and the UK get 50% or more of the available drill properties that are available over there. There's 85 of them, and 60 of them are going to go up for bid if Parliament passes the legislation, which is okayed by their council and which was written in the United States. I think once that happens and the bidding goes down, I think they'll get that done by July. And once that's done, I think that troops will be withdrawn. And I think in the negotiations that are going on this month, in the month of April, I think deals will be made to bring an end as well to the civil war. And it'll put Iran and Syria in a better bargaining position than they are presently. As you probably know, Russia said that they're going to cut off their nuclear fuel because the UN Security Council has deemed that they should do that. And that's going to kind of neutralize Iran as far as that condition is concerned. So I think Iran's going to back off and at the same time assist as much as they can in the ending of the civil war in Iraq because they want to help the fellow Shias there redevelop the country, and they want to do business with them as well. I think that an attack or an invasion of Iran probably won't happen. And I know everything is in place, and I know the Israelis will be very disappointed, but and that's the way I think it's going to turn out.
Well, I certainly hope that you are correct and that I am wrong. So we're just going to just have to wait and see what's going to happen, but I hope and pray you're right, Bob.
And when the financial markets, you've got a whole bunch of nasty things going on. The scandals in the brokerage business and the banking business and corporate America are just absolutely incredible. This has been going on for 6 years now. I've been in financial markets for 47 years. I've never seen anything like this.
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Bob's opinion is that we are trying to extricate ourselves from Iraq, and that the surge is simply a cover for preparing to pull our troops out, and that Bob does not think there's going to be an attack on Iran, because it would be totally illogical for this to take place, and I agree with him, but I really do believe there's going to be an attack, and we're just going to have to wait and see. I hope and pray, one of the few times I've ever hoped absolutely that I am wrong, and I hope that Bob is absolutely right, and we're going to know very, very soon. But Bob is then talking about the total depravity and the illegal things that are going on in the brokerage business. He says, you know, he's been in this business for 47 years. He's never seen the degree of corruption we have in the stock market and the brokerage market today. So go ahead, Bob.
Well, it just keeps right on coming at you. And, like, they just caught 16 banks. Now, they didn't just catch them. The banks have been doing this for years in brokerage houses. And what they were doing is they have inside information on bond bids. So they make the bids so that they make money, but lots and lots of money. And the buyer of the bonds, usually institutions and one kind or another, they pay too high a price. So the SEC fines 16 of them, I don't know, it was $230 million or something, which to those people is just chump change. And what the SEC said, and the chairman of the SEC refused comment. It's Chris Cox, the ex-politician. And what they said was, as long as you tell the public that you're screwing them, it's okay to do it. Now, I just, that is beyond comprehension. they have, this is a $650 billion a year market, and these firms have a license to steal. And they're telling the public, we're doing business with you, but we're stealing from you. And the regulator, the SEC, says, oh, that's okay, as long as everybody knows they're stealing. Now, have you ever heard of anything like that in your life?
Well, we live in a world gone mad, Bob, and the problem is everybody thinks those of us who try to warn what's going on are crazy.
Well, anyway, this sort of thing is rife. You know, they still have 600 corporate offices who backdated options, who are making deals to pay penalties, resign, and give the money back. And some of them, they're trying them because they won't make a deal. See, with the SEC and the United States government, if you cooperate and if you make a deal, they'll fine you. Might be $1 million, it might be $30 million. Who knows? But if you argue with them, they'll do their best to put you in jail for the rest of your life. I mean, this is, we're dealing with some sick fascists. And that's exactly what they are. Well, anyway, that all leads up to the tenor of the moment. What is acceptable and what isn't? Well, obviously, anything goes as long as you're in the group, either an elitist or an elitist hanger-oner, and you've got lots of problems. And we've all heard about the subprime lending problem. Stan, you heard about it 3 years ago when I wrote about it. And I said it will destroy the market, and it will be a repeat of what we saw at the savings and loan fiasco in the early 1980s, which I predicted in 1982.
Well, I think really
I said by 1985 we're talking $500 billion in losses, and that's exactly what it was.
Well, I think really what's so interesting about what's going on today is that now, Sydney, after all this time, even some of our pundits, even some of our people in government, people like Alan Greenspan, who created this whole housing bubble by encouraging people to take out these adjustable-rate mortgages, knowing full well that, you know, when it came time to renegotiate them, they wouldn't be able to get a decent rate, and, of course, many of them would lose their homes. Now these people are all saying, well, gee, isn't this terrible? Well, this could have a devastating impact on the market. It's almost as if they intentionally wanted to destroy the stability of our markets and our currency.
You're absolutely correct. And, you know, in the issue you have there, I projected between $700 billion and $1.3 trillion in losses. And that's a little complicated, but the losses in the savings and loan fiasco were $500 billion. Okay, what are we talking about? We're talking about over in the vicinity of 3 million people who can't make house payments. We get that moron from Connecticut, who a senator, Dodd, with a straight face says, well, we have to do something to help these people, like subsidize their home payments. My answer is, why don't you just give them the homes? I mean, the whole thing is just madness. I mean, we're having problems with people who are triple B, triple B minus, and ALTA type loans. Well, what are they? They're a bunch of loans that were made to people who had no documents. They just said, you know, I make enough money, I can pay the payments, and they say, hunky-dory, and that's okay. And, of course, they had an FOIC rating of perhaps 600 to 700, maybe even higher. And so that's fine. You can have a loan. And then they had a whole bunch of people who lied about their income. Some of them couldn't read nor write. And it just goes on and on. So we're looking at 26 companies that have gone under, three of which were bought out by other firms.
Now, these are subprime lenders.
These are subprime lenders.
Right.
Lenders. Excuse me, I should have been clearer. And we're looking at more than 100 going down. Plus, all the mom-and-pop places that are now pulling the sign down, closing the doors, and disappearing into the night. Now, not only are we going to get piles of houses thrown on the market, we're going to have a lot of people going into bankruptcy. In Detroit right now, they're selling houses for less than they sell for the average car, which is $29,000. Can you believe that? They have hundreds and hundreds of homes and blocks that are empty, whole swaths of the city where nobody lives there anymore. Now, this is going to happen in lesser degree in many other cities. Those cities were the hot 30 cities where the real estate went crazy, for lack of a better word. And they're all going to get whacked big time. The total losses will be about 40%. In California, they'll be higher. Maybe in Atlanta, it'll be lower. Maybe in someplace else, it'll be lower. But you're looking at 35-40%. But in California, you get a special problem. Because in 06, you're looking at 72-64% of all the loans that were made with subprime or adjustable rate or option or interest only. It's overwhelming, really overwhelming in that state. And so they're all going to get whacked. Now, that means that we're looking at a terrible contraction in credit. We're looking at massive losses by individuals and companies, and that's going to go up the feeding chain. Now, why is that? It's because we're in a recession. It started a year ago, and it's going to get a lot worse. And people are going to start losing their jobs who have had good credit, bought a house, they don't have a job anymore, they can't make the payments. These people on ALT loans, these people have 30-year fixed, and they might have had between 700 and 900 on their FOIC, which is a rating system. And so they're starting to lose their homes. And that'll become more prevalent 2 years from now. That'll begin in 09. And it'll get more difficult at that point in time for those kinds of loans, although some of them will be in trouble before then. Then we have the CDOs, collateralized debt obligations. Now, what happened was the lenders sold the loans that they wrote for these people, which were bogus, and they sold them to brokerage houses and the banks, and they packaged them, securitized them, and they were called collateralized debt obligations, and they had a bunch of loans in the securitized package. And if one of the loans goes bad or a number of them go bad, they go back to the lender, and the lender has to take the loan back. Well, goodness gracious, the lender isn't around anymore. He's out of business. So we have who's going to take the loss. Is it going to be the holder of the security, or is it going to be the packager? I don't know what the answer is to that, but either way, it's not very good. And so we have this pressure on that entire market, and that's spreading to other markets. And at the same time, the Swiss have raised their interest rate, which means it makes it more difficult to use the Swiss franc carry trade. The Japanese have raised their interest rate, making it more difficult for the Japanese yen carry trade. And those are methods of borrowing money very cheaply to invest elsewhere without going into great detail. And so we have another contraction there. At the same time, the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, Australia, New Zealand, and Canada and the United States have been increasing their money supplies at an average of around 11%. That's money and credit. America, the Federal Reserve doesn't publish those figures anymore, but we do in the International Forecaster just to defy them. Because what they really want is the professionals not to know what's going on.
And you're
professionals will keep their mouths shut.
And of course, your last forecaster said that you felt that the M3 was up about 11%. Would that be right?
11.3.
Okay. Well, of course, what this really means, of course, is the value of people's financial holdings are declining at the rate of 11.3%. In other words, inflation has nothing to do with rising prices. It has to do with increasing the monetary supply. When they increase the monetary supply 11.3%, you've got an inflation rate of 11.3%, and of course they stole 11.3% of the value of all of your fixed assets last year, and it's going to only get worse. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Okay, Bob, pick the story up from there.
So anyway, you're having a contraction in credit. So we already have had, in the United States, a full 3 years of credit creation and money creation in that vicinity of 10-11%. And we've had private creation of credit by derivatives and other lenders, banks, banks borrowing $1 billion from Japan and lending $8 billion out because they got $1 billion in collateral. It's like a Ponzi scheme. It's like a pyramid.
Well, Bob, is there any shortage of investment, say, for commercial loans, things like that?
Yeah, commercial loans mostly because the public has cut back. But the gamblers, the speculators, they haven't cut back at all. In fact, on the New York Stock Exchange, January set a record for margin, and February was even higher. It'll be interesting to see what March is, in as much as we had that fall in the market the last week in February, the first 2 weeks in March.
Now, what you're really referring to is the fact that people are buying stocks on margin. The margin requirement is 50%, but you know, if they got enough 50%, they can certainly double the number of shares of stock that they are buying. And if the price of the stock goes up or down, as it may be, they can double their profit. Well, the profit is
right,
that if it turns against them, it doubles their loss.
That's right. And, you know, most people don't realize. In fact, I don't think 95% of the people in the brokerage business realize that for hedge funds and other institutions that short in their funds, their margin requirement is now around 25%. And actually, it varies from 15 to 30. And most people don't know that. And that's about the kind of leverage that existed in 1929.
Well, Bob,
and the hedge funds are nothing but an extension of the old trusts that were outlawed in the early 30s for doing the same thing during the late 20s. And they were part of the reason, along with 90% margin and interest-only loans and the cutback by the Federal Reserve of money and credit starting in 1928 that brought the economy and the market down and really destroyed the American economy. Had we not had another war, I don't know where it would have ended up.
Well, Bob, tell me, though, is there a shortage of money for commercial loans, or can you go out and get a commercial loan readily?
Readily.
You sure can.
Absolutely. And what I was getting at here is that because of the cutback in all the methods of borrowing money I just mentioned, which was the two carry trades and the assumption of perhaps less risk by risk takers, speculators, after having looked at what went on in the subprime and other parts of the mortgage market. And incidentally, I think that's all going to spread to the junk bond market because the spreads are widening between the yields on the junk bonds and the AAA bonds. And that's in tomorrow's issue, incidentally. I give the spreads. But the point here is that in order to keep the game going, the U.S. government, via the Federal Reserve and the other central banks in the world, are going to have to double the amount of money and credit that they're willing to pass out to these speculators who are operating on average about 10 or 12 to 1. In other words, for every dollar they've got.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Bob Chapman. And Bob is suggesting that the people, the Fed, and just going to have to double the amount of money that's is out there. Is that in essence what you're saying, or the double the rate at which they're creating new money? What do you actually think is going to happen?
Well, I think they're going to increase money and credit from 10 or 11% to 20.
Just
it's the only way they can keep the system going.
Zimbabwe. That's how they started in Zimbabwe.
Yeah. Well, our Weimar in Germany, 1923. They had a different unique problem, but anyway, the same sort of thing. You know, you go to work, and your wife comes at noontime with the wheelbarrow to pick up your money that you just got paid for half a day's work, and she rushes down with the real wheelbarrow and buys something at the local store, the meat market, or whatever it is. And while she's inside, somebody steals a wheelbarrow because it's worth more than the money that's in the wheelbarrow. But be as it may, this is where we're headed. And that means that we're going to have hyperinflation. Inflation's over 10%. Cleveland Fed admitted to 4.87 yesterday, even though the Bureau of Labor Statistics tells us it's 2.7. Every figure that comes out of the United States government is bogus. It's untruthful. It's a lie. And so with that said, I see inflation doubling to 20%. Now, what does that mean? It means gold and silver-related assets are going to go right through the roof.
All right. Well, it's going to be very interesting. And, of course, right now, you know, although they were up a little bit today, they certainly have held them down here for the last several months. When do you actually anticipate that they're really going to start taking off?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because for the last many years, the central banks have been selling their gold. They had 33,000 tons, or at least that's what they said they had. And I believe, personally, they have less than 5,000 tons left. It could be 1,000, it might be 5. It's hard to say. But they're down to that level. And they don't, because they don't have a lot of gold for sale, and the amount of money that is available, lost my train of thought, sorry.
Well, you're saying that the central banks are running out of gold.
Right. Oh, and so I'm getting tired is the problem.
I know you're
tired. This is my 16. This is about my 20th hour. So, and I did 4 shows today, so it's a little hard. But anyway, they're running out of gold, and each time they're having a harder time pushing gold back down because the physical market is tremendous. India, the Middle East, China, other places, but not America, Canada, and Europe. They don't have a clue to what's going on. I just think they got to be dumber than dumb. But anyway, that's what's going on in that area. And what the Fed and the U.S. Treasury have been doing is they've been shorting the producing and good quality gold stocks. And they've been doing that to make it appear that gold really shouldn't go higher. The shares usually lead forward, upward, prior to bullion moving. And so what they do is when the market goes down, they make the stocks go down. That virtually never happens. And they're playing all these games in the market. They're going to lose. The fundamentals will overwhelm them, and then as they go toward their goal of world government and their fascist society in America and then throughout the world, there's going to be that big window of opportunity on both sides. And that's where we're going to have to act to stop these people. Because our efforts heretofore have not been very successful for the past 50 years. And we did gain a little traction in the last election. And maybe we could gain more in the next one. But we could be a little too late. You don't like to give up. And I never do. And we got to fight and use all the legal methods possible to expose these people, like the administration has been exposed for the vile creatures that they are, and many in Congress as well. But that's not good enough. We've got to get the Patriot Act changed, and there's a lot of things that we have to do and we have to get accomplished. And if we're unsuccessful in doing that, we're going to have to fight for our country.
All right, bring you back here in just a moment or two with Bob Chapman, the international forecaster. And Bob's views are certainly always very challenging. I think he's absolutely right. We're moving towards the destruction of the monetary system of our nation. And if you want to destroy a society, you destroy the value of the currency. OK, Okay, Bob, go ahead and pick up the story there.
I think we are just going into the middle part of the first wave of recession. It became obvious last June that the industrial aspect of our society was losing traction, and the figures that we're seeing since last November are quite frankly dreadful. And as you know, 23% of the economy is made up of the construction market, and then you have all of the follow-ons that are involved in the industry, which is akin to that, which is appraisers and real estate people, and all the suppliers. And we're looking at, over the next 2 years, collectively, we're looking at over a million. I figure 1.2 million jobs are going to be lost. Now, thus far, as of like last October, we lost 100,000. And I suspect that just in construction alone, we'll lose another 300,000. And so that's really going to get the pot boiling. And we have another problem, too, because most of the people who are going to be laid off in construction and in the service industries are illegal aliens. And they're going to be marching the streets, so they're going to be going home, one or the other, from whence they came, and most of them don't want to go home. And it's created, it's going to create an enormous problem, because you have about 14 million people who are here illegally who are working. And if they don't have a job, I mean, what do they do? Well, they're going to have to turn to crime. You know, the police in Los Angeles have just given up on the gangs. These are all foreigners, and most of them are illegal aliens from one country or another. And in fact, I read a report today that said that they expect civil war in Los Angeles. There's 200,000 gang members just in L.A. 200,000. That is more U.S. troops than what we've got in Iraq. And these people are all running around with assault weapons. Automatic. So we're looking at a social crisis in big cities as well as an unemployment problem. We are looking at some very, very difficult times. And this is what I'm telling you is all based on economics, finance, and social profiling. Finding out what's going to happen to our economy, projecting it.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment.
These kind of difficulties happen.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and before we go on, Bob, I want you to get out your website and your telephone number so people would know if they want to get a copy of the International Forecaster, how to do it. And I will tell you, I always look forward to the International Forecaster, and I read it twice a week when it comes. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, the Forecaster is published by email twice a week, about 25 or 30 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out twice a month. It's about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. We have a website. That address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. Now, we send people free introductory copies, so you can either go to the site to find out how to do that, or we have a toll-free number you can call, which is 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188.
All right, fine. And Bob was just saying that certainly in Los Angeles, why the police there pretty well give it up in the gangs. There are about 200,000 gang members in various gangs down there. Many of them have automatic weapons. He anticipates there will be civil war in Los Angeles. And, of course, this is really what happens as a nation begins to move into a period of chaos and crisis at the end of the economic cycle, especially when that country has lost its moral foundation and its leaders no longer fear God. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, you're right. And Americans have just lost it. And the Europeans have, too. And the Canadians have. I don't know what it's like socially over in Australia or New Zealand. And I think most of Latin America has kept their moorings because they kept the family unit to a great extent, although they have a lot of divorce in those countries, and they have the same basic kinds of problems like use of drugs and alcoholism that everybody else has. But I don't think they're as deeply affected. And the pursuit of these avenues of layoffs and a turning down of the economy, no matter what they do, they're in a box, they can't get out. There is no solution. There is no conclusion to this thing. And I said that in 2001 when I projected in 2000 that we were going to have a war and where it was going to be and how it would be triggered. And before that, I got everybody out of the stock market and got them into gold and silver related assets. So they didn't lose their tail in the market, and they've done very well with their investments in gold and silver related assets. And we're just looking at major cities, 30 of them at least in the United States, where all hell could break loose. I mean, the underpinnings are just enormous. And, you know, the illegal alien population, the good people, they work hard. We know why they're here. And they're not bad people. There are bad illegal aliens, but there's bad Americans and bad everything else. And what I'm afraid of here is that they're going to join these gangs or turn to crime when they have no other way of making a living, and we could have civil turmoil like you wouldn't believe. I'll give you a good example of the mindset of these people. Our president was in Guatemala, which is one of the nations that is very close to George Bush and his neocons. And people were marching who had been in the United States or and had come home or were sympathetic with illegal aliens in the United States, telling him that he shouldn't be having these raids on people who are illegally in the country and sending them back home. And the president of Guatemala made a speech and said, yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. Now, George, I must say, did hold his ground there, but that's not the point. I mean, these people seem to think that they have some kind of a God-given right to be able to go into any country they please illegally and do what they want. Not that they're harmful, other than perhaps to the economy, but it's just the mindset is unbelievable. And when you have the perceptions and the goals that these people have coming, let's just say, from Mexico to Los Angeles, where in Mexico they were making $300 or $400 a month, and in Los Angeles they can make $400 a week. It's nirvana for them. And they're going to continue to try to stay there because the economic situation at home is not as good, and or at least wage-wise it's not. And I foresee terrible social disruption. And we're two years away from it. It'll start to evolve. It's bad now, but you don't hear about it because the media keeps it away from the public. If you live in Redondo Beach and they have a riot, you know it because you live there. I lived in L.A. for 36 years. I saw this coming. I moved out in 1993. I said, the game is totally over. And I moved out in 89 and came back after about a year and a half, and then lived there in 93, and I left. And in Los Angeles, the tax base has been destroyed. That's their major problem there. And they just keep on going into debt, and there's no way out for them because of the demands of these people who have come from other places, particularly medical and social services and things like that. And now in L.A. they have a mayor that agrees with illegal immigration and do what you want and that sort of thing. And you can't live in that environment because it's going to get you killed, because that's where it's all leading. And so I'm not very optimistic, On that note, I am optimistic about Iran not being invaded, but I think America's going to have their hands full.
Well, inside of these, what I think is going to happen in these major cities is you're going to have, of course, chaotic inner cities. You're going to have, of course, the affluent whites fleeing, or whites and blacks, whoever has the money, fleeing to the suburbs and living, inside gated communities with barbed wire all around them and guards at the gates. Just like other countries, will have a similar situation. You have, of course, the great masses who are impoverished, and then you have, a small affluent upper class.
Well, Europe's got the same problem. It's even worse. France is a zoo. Spain and Portugal over the last 15 years have got their hands full. Holland had south people from the South Pacific. They've had terrible problems with them. England, forget it. I mean, they get people there from all over the world. I would say probably 30 or 40% of the people are non-Britons, we'll call them. And they have nothing in common with the culture. I mean, one of the things that people forget is it's one thing having people come into your country, but you want them to assimilate. And up until the 1960s, that happened in America. The Italians and the Polish and the Irish and on, they all assimilated, they all learned English, they could read and write for almost totally. And now we have people coming into our country, and they speak Chinese, and that's the end of it. They speak Spanish, and that's the end of it. In our high schools, less than 50% of the Latino students graduate. The figure is unfortunately the same for black children. Very few go to university. And where do they end up? On the lower end of the economic ladder. And who do they compete with? The illegal aliens. And so it isn't good. It's not a good story. Out in the suburbs outside Paris, I mean, the police won't even go into certain areas like they won't in the United States. And incidentally, the death ratio in Washington, D.C. is worse than it is in Iraq, and guns are banned in D.C. How's that?
Yeah, but of course, anybody who's a criminal has a gun and has nothing to fear from the populace because they've been disarmed.
That's right. So never give up your weapons.
Right. You need them to protect yourself and your family. Unfortunately, there are people who are doing everything they can to encourage chaos in America under the name of freedom. And remember that when liberty leads to a loss of order, then eventually the demand for order leads to a loss of all liberty. Well, Bob, right now, of course, if you look at the gold stocks, why things like Agrico Eagle and Silver Standard, there's certainly no relationship at all between the price of the stock and the earnings of that stock. In other words, traditionally you like to see a stock with a price-earnings ratio of 10 to 1, something like that. But, I mean, with many of the gold and silver stocks, it's just completely out of bounds.
Well, they've depressed them, there's no question, although they're in the 30s, and we recommended Silver Standard at $1.50 and Agnico Eagle at $5, $4.50, $5. And people are doing well, and they'll continue to do well, but they should be selling now somewhere over $100 a share, and they will. People just have to be patient.
No,
and
no,
quite
how,
frankly,
how,
people don't have any other alternative.
What's Agnico Eagle and Silver Standard going for now?
Agnico today closed at 37.88, and Silver Standard closed at 32.82. And I have some other stocks, two of them that have just gone berserk. Rainy River and Canadian Funds, we have recommended that at 85 cents. It's 4.59 on the close today. It's been as high as 6.80. And Capella Resources, which has gold and silver properties but is pursuing uranium, just moved from 60 cents to $1.56. And so lots of people are making lots of money. And so you've got to be patient with investments, because the government's going to lose. The insiders are going to lose, because there isn't enough money in the world to manipulate every market.
Well, of course, as we begin moving increasingly into chaos and crisis, why, you know, they're simply going to keep putting out more and more money, and they're going to destroy the value of everybody's savings, of their pension funds, you know, certainly of their bonds, of their annuities, of their CDs, anything that's in a fixed asset. You know, you could just see how this is going to be destroyed as we begin moving from the 11% inflation, 10 or 11% we have now, you know, up until 20%, 30%. Today in Zimbabwe, the government, the United States and Henry Kissinger installed there in Zimbabwe, there's 1,700% inflation a year. And that's up from 1,200% a year just about 3 months ago.
Well, I have the notorious distinction of having lived in Zimbabwe for 3 years, and I know Robert Mugabe very well, and when I knew him, he didn't see me like he was nuts, but he is.
Well,
they turned the beautiful country upside down.
Right, and of course now, of course, anybody who speaks out against him gets either beaten to death or killed. And I suppose if you're beaten to death, you are killed. I mean, the major leader against him trying to escape from the country, of course, was severely beaten and had a head injury. And when people complained, Mugabe's remark was, "Go hang yourself." This is the man that
you've got to understand. Africa, it's in a class by itself. It's all tribalism. It's all dictatorship. It's all violence. You know, once colonial powers left Africa, it headed right straight back to the bush.
But of course, Henry,
it's ungovernable.
But Henry Kissinger promised the people of Zimbabwe that if things ever got out of line, the United States would come to their rescue. He guaranteed, he promised, he gave his word of honor. And of course, Henry Kissinger lies. Henry Kissinger's word of honor, and $5 will buy a cup of coffee at almost any Starbucks shop in the nation.
Don't get me started on that guy. He's despicable.
Well, anyway,
there are some people who you disagree with, you can have respect for, even though they disagree with you, but he's not one of them.
Okay, fine. Now, what do you foresee happening to the economy over the next 6 months to a year?
It's going down. And it's not going to be nice.
Do you agree
with
your...
people are going to be shocked, and Wall Street and the Treasury Department and the Fed are going to keep on telling us everything is going to be okay. We got it handled because we're masters of the universe. Well, I get news for them. They're not bulletproof, and we're going to find that out.
Well, I think that, of course, it's going to be a very tragic time for many, many people who have not positioned themselves. And we've been here doing these programs for many years now, and I know at least some of the people who listen have protected themselves, have gotten out of debt, and you know they're doing very well now. But it's so difficult for most people just to take that big move. What sort of gold should people be buying if they were going to buy?
Well, I think people should first consider gold coins, particularly numismatic coins, because they're protected under law from confiscation. The MS-64 is in higher right now.
But of course, Bob, can we trust the government not to change the laws?
No, you can't trust the government ever. But at least that's the way the law is now. The government can do anything it wants to do. That's why beside your coins, in your safe, you have an assault weapon with 8 clips that holds 30 rounds and 1,000 rounds of ammunition for each weapon. And everybody in the house should have one. And if you don't, you're a fool. But anyway, numismatic coins, 90% silver bags in the silver area. And for those who want to speculate, they can go in and buy gold and silver stocks, and we help people with that.
All right, let's go to Henry, who's calling from Connecticut. Hi, Henry. Do you have a question for our guest?
Hi. Yeah, Mr. Chapman. Hello?
You go ahead.
Yeah, okay, if he can hear me. Yeah, I spoke to a person who was an expert in gold like you, and I asked him, you know, how come gold went down 640-something, and now I understand it shot back up to 640.59 today. And, you know, I mentioned that thing that you were talking about hammering it down, how they try to buy into the market, dump gold into the market to keep the price kind of low and try to control it. But he told me that they lost control because of India and China. Now, is that true?
To some extent, yes, and it's waning. And as each day goes by, they lose more and more control. And so he is right, basically.
Okay, so even though they're trying to Rothschild, I know Rothschild, like you do, Rothschild sets the gold at 5 in the morning over here. That's New England time. That would be 10 o'clock UTC, which is London time, that they set the gold every day and try to manipulate it. But apparently they are losing control. So even though they do control a certain portion of it, you said because of China and India, they're trying to hammer it down. But yet investors are still buying it because they're trying to keep it below 640. Now it shot up to 659 that quickly.
Henry, you hang on there for just a minute.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
All right.
Our guest has been Bob Chapman. Well, Bob, does the Rothschilds still set the price of gold? I thought they'd got out of the
market. No, they don't. No, they don't. Barclays and others do. Barclays took their place.
Until recently.
I think Rothschild got out with the going was good.
They got out of it about 3 or 4 years ago, Henry.
Oh, they got out of gold 3 or 4 years ago?
They got out of setting the price of gold daily. And just in the same way that AIG, which had set the price of silver, that was Hank Greenberg, they quit setting that. So these people know that something big is afoot. And the Rothschilds gave up something they've been doing for almost 200 years. And you have to ask yourself, what do they know that the rest of us don't know?
They gave up something they've been doing for two... You sound low, that's why I'm on my end.
Right.
They gave up something they've been doing for 200 years, and that is what, setting and manipulating gold now?
Well, setting the price at least.
They
probably manipulating gold from time to time. But it's my personal opinion that they own plenty of gold in their own right and in their corporations and funds and things like that. And so they're not out of gold. They're just out of the fixing.
No, they don't no longer have that morning fix themselves.
Now who does now, or is it just sort of open?
Oh, there's a group. There's 4, 5, 6 of them. And they get together and they decide what the price is going to be.
Right, but it's not Rothschild. So who is it?
Banks. And I don't know the names of all of them.
All right, but it's not the banks controlled by the Illuminati. You're saying like it's other
people. No, they are all controlled by the Illuminati.
Right, but isn't Rothschild run the Illuminati? So that's why I figured everything would be him.
Yeah,
and
but they're in the background. They're not in the fix. They're still doing what they did before, but not officially in the fix.
Right, so that basically what they've done is they've taken a step back. So they're working now in the shadows, Henry. But they're still there. I don't ever doubt that. Do you have anything else? Because we've got to let you go right at
yes,
time.
Yes, a few other things. All right. A while ago you said that, because I never heard anything about this, about Kissinger. You said that Kissinger was a pedophile. Now, I never heard anything like that.
Well, I don't think I have ever said
that. No, not you. Not you. Robert Chapman, he said so. One time.
Yes, and that's true.
All right, fine. We're out of time, Henry, but thanks so much for calling. And Sidney Kissinger is not a very nice human being, that's for certain. Well, Bob, I want to thank you very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure having you on board.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry I shocked so many people, but those are the facts.
Okay, fine. God bless. We'll talk to you probably in a week or so.
Our
guest has been Bob Chapman, International Forecaster, the number one more time.
It's 1-800-375-4188.
Bye-bye. Good night, Bob. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, of course, has been Bob Chapman. And, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And we do depend upon those of you who believe in what we're doing to help us so we can maintain the network we have. It's not gigantic, but it's about 60 outlets every week. By the time you take in the shortwaves and the internets and the satellites, but believe me, it's an expensive proposition, especially those satellite bills and the network bills. But with your help, why we're going to be able to maintain what we have. And so if you'd like to get perhaps one of our catalogs, our health product catalogs, our emergency food catalogs or simply our regular products that would help Radio Liberty, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Now, I do hope that many of you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because it will explain to you the spiritual forces that energize everything going on today. And then, of course, we do hope that you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day, directly or indirectly on the Internet. I should mention that our afternoon shortwave frequency is going to change on Monday to 9.480. Our evening program will still be on the same shortwave at 5.755, but our afternoon program will move to 9.480 kilohertz, if you prefer. And then, of course, we hope you'll tell others about our program and encourage them to listen to Radio Liberty. Now, if you, of course, are interested in getting knowledge about the Berkey water filter products, you can certainly call Mary at the number we've given you, 1-800-544-8927. Certainly, I believe we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis and uncertainty, and we're recommending that all of our listeners consider very seriously having a supply of food and certainly of vitamins and minerals and that sort of thing on hand. You certainly ought to try to get a prescription for antibiotics or any proprietary medicines. Stock up on them from your physician. Get a supply in, because if we have a breakdown in distribution, things will just not be available. Now, Bob Chapman believes there's not going to be invasion of Iran because it's totally unrealistic. It's organized insanity. Why would we want to expand the war in the Middle East? And I agree totally. Why would we want to expand the war in the Middle East? Why would the Iranians be doing everything they possibly can to encourage an irrational war? And the only explanation, if it does come to pass, is that there are other spiritual forces at work. This is covered in my February Radio Liberty letter. Now, that'll be available in about 2 weeks. You can always call us at 1-800-544-8927 and request a copy. If you've not yet seen the videos, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, the story of the secret societies that were here when America was founded, or the latest video that's put out by our good friend Chris Pinto entitled Riddles in Stone. Why, of course, if you'd like more information about them, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. The only way to understand what's going on in America, the only way to understand what's going on in the Middle East, and to make any sense out of the things there that really seem to be organized insanity, is to understand the spiritual forces that are energizing and directing America's foreign and domestic policies. And believe me, it is not George Bush, and it is not the leaders of the Republican or Democratic parties. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. May the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.